Before we get it back into our discussion, at the end of our session last time, Mary asked if I could take a look at a book called Return of the Gods and see if we can maybe talk about it a little bit. It's a really interesting book. It's a new book by
Jonathan Cahn.
Jonathan Cahn, C-A-H-N. And he's a Protestant fellow, but he's done a lot of look at what's happening in the systems right now. And it's called Return of the Gods. And so I also read a separate book besides that called Liber Christa. And that's a book on exorcisms.
Oh, really?
And getting rid of demons and stuff like this. And in that book, they make the point that all the ancient gods were real, but they were demons.
See, I always thought they were ideas, but they
were real. No, they were real.
They were real. I never even thought
we didn't even talk about
it. But they were all demons. And so when, in this Liber Christa book, they talk about how demons will come and try to possess you or try to get you away from God, or they'll tempt you away and all. And that's what the gods do. And they have these malicious intents, like Molech, for example, was big on sacrificing children. So women would put their babies up on the statue, on the altar, and it would go into the fire, you know. And they would always blow these real loud trumpets at the time in celebration because they didn't want anybody to hear this child screaming when he was being burned to death.
Yeah. And his point is that now that we've rejected God, our culture, they can move back in.
Yeah. They need a religion.
Yeah.
What's going on now?
But what gods are they talking about?
The three main ones, like...
One is Molech, one is the woman.
Yes, Venus in Latin. Yeah. Greek, it's...
Iktar, I think.
Iktar. And in Mesopotamian, it's something else. But they're all the same god in different
Well, they're all different
languages.
They're all different demons, yeah.
I mean, I like that they kind of talk about, like, Zeus.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When my daughter was...
So in this Liber Christa book, it talks about how these demons try to get you away from God and try to fill your mind with all kind of crazy stuff, you know? And like this whole push we have in this country on, you know, aborting our children and all, that comes from those same demons, like Molech and stuff, you know? And so that book talks about how to fight against this these demons trying to take possession of your soul and all. And they make the point that you're not necessarily going to be possessed, but they're going to try to influence you and try to get you away. And they mention these different gods from like Egypt and stuff like this. And that's one of the reasons why they had to get out of Egypt. Moses had, because Pharaoh said, "Why don't you stay here and worship your God?" And Moses said, "We cannot worship our God properly unless we leave and go into the desert." And so the first thing they did at Mount Sinai was build a golden calf, right? Another one of the gods of Egypt. And what did they do with it? So it's sacrificing.
Yeah. So it gives you a great idea of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
That we don't get in Catholic school.
Yeah, I know. And so it's really interesting when you look at this. So this guy talks about possession and, you know, how to fight it and all the kind of stuff he is. And he also mentions, what's that book in England? Harry Potter.
He said
some of the spells they mentioned in Harry Potter are actually real satanic spells.
Oh man!
That they incorporated into the book.
Harry Potter.
But they used to try to tell us, you know, Harry Potter maybe isn't the best book for our kids.
Yeah.
So
my daughter had that. She wouldn't let
it.
Any of the kids, and she spread it around. Mm-hmm. She had a priest, Jack Spaulding, when she was in Arizona at Maria Goretti, and he taught them all about this. And she said, no, people, not that evil God comes down, but she said, those people have a lot of evil around them.
But the interesting thing is the author of that is anti-gay.
Yeah.
And she has a lot
anti-choice.
She's very conservative.
So people are mixed, you know.
Yeah, they're real mixed.
And they're attacking her because she's
anti-choice.
And so having read that book, when I started reading Return of the Gods, you know, it made so much sense because they're saying back in the old days, like in Egypt and all, they actually worshipped those gods, and they had names for them and everything like that. And so they had temples for them and they would go to the temple, and they had priests and priestesses of the gods, and they would almost always incorporate orgies and this kind of stuff in their worship. So it was very debased in everything they did. But it was actually a religion. So they would actually go to worship them like we go to church today, you know. But they can't do that anymore because we wouldn't accept that now. And so the point he makes in Return of the Gods is that those same spirits have come, and they're getting... And the big thing was pretty interesting to me looking at it. He said, look back in this country in the 1950s and 40s. You didn't have any of this stuff.
No.
You know, you didn't... Abortion wasn't accepted. Divorce was looked down upon. Promiscuity was looked down upon. Somebody who got pregnant out of wedlock was looked down upon. You know?
Until prayer was put out.
Yeah.
And
all those kind of things. Exactly.
O'Hare did her thing. But the other interesting thing I thought was, you know, people complain about God being so condemning in the Old Testament, but when you listen to this, the people had really rebelled against God, and they were really evil. And we take it out of context, and we don't realize that God was very patient until
He was very He's patient now. Yeah. When you look at how many abortions we've had in this country alone, then all the human trafficking and the drugs and
the blasphemy
and the blasphemy and everything else. And it's interesting because he talks about what happened to. Like almost overnight, it came in gradually. Started in the 60s. You know, back in the old days, before the 60s, you go to the movies, and any kid could go to any movie, right?
Yeah.
You got to really watch the movies you go to now.
It's hard to watch movies.
So it's actually infiltrated into our entertainment. Listen to the rap songs you have now.
Everything.
You know? And it's
similar. People don't see things. Like, I remember visiting a family member on a trip, and one of my daughters and I went up into their upstairs to watch it. He had a movie going, and we went up to watch it, and it was King of the Throne, and it was a naked woman being burned on the stage.
I know, really.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is this? And it didn't even faze him.
It doesn't.
Yeah. It's just like,
the more they see it, the more they accept it. And they get just...
And I'm like, can we change the channel?
Yeah.
Can you watch it later?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
no, it didn't even faze
him. No.
Yes, so he's... So he talks about how this all of a sudden started in the 60s, and it was step by step, a little bit at a time, you know? Hi, George. They had the George Blumberg just joined us. We talked about Return of the Gods. The book, and so he talks about how these ideas kept in same kind of ideas they had back then, but they do it through our entertainment, our finances, our politics, and all these kind of things. So instead of having a temple, you just have a different way of doing the same thing. And so you see the kids being corrupted morally. You see what's happening to schools. The idea was to get rid of God. He said those gods went away because the gospel started spreading through the world.
Right.
When Jesus said, go into the world and spread the gospel, you know, he went out. So as the gospel moved in, those things were pushed back. But now they're trying to push God out and bring those things back into society.
And they're doing pretty well.
And they're doing pretty well right now, you know. Yeah. And so you have all this human trafficking, abortions, the drugs, the illegal immigration, the crime, the violence. People have no problem doing violence. Look at all the things we had just over the past weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, this is incredible.
And you know what it all... And you know when COVID happened and everything shut down?
Yeah.
It's like this...
That's another example of it, yeah.
It was like a door open.
Yeah.
And everything was going on. And I think most people were like...
But they're doing it again.
Right. And they're like, why aren't they stopping?
They're trying to do it again.
In the colleges and the hospitals.
Yeah, they're trying to do it again.
And they did a whole study about how it's kind of toxic to you. You got to let them air out for a while.
It doesn't work. But the Democrats want this.
Yeah.
I just saw something on TV this morning. one of the doctors spoke, the 95 masks that are coming out there, of course, they're from China. They have so much toxicity in them.
Yeah, that's what
that
I read.
They said the smell is horrific.
The N95 masks are horrible.
She's got to let them lay out for, I mean, we have a bunch of those. You got to lay them out for like a while and air them out.
Yeah, and they don't help. They prove
they
that
don't help.
They do
they don't
nothing.
Help.
The masks
and the CDC
do nothing.
Is really wrong. And people believe the CDC. That's what's so upsetting.
Yeah. And they said now the rise in myopia with the children from 3 years old up to 16, it's 30% increasing because of their way of life with the cell phones and the handheld things. They said the kids have got to be out, which I didn't know about the eyes, that they need a certain amount of sunshine to make the eyes so they can see in the distance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's like they said it was dopamine that you get. Yeah. And if the eye doesn't get that, she said, I am seeing kids come in that need glasses 30% more than normal.
Yeah.
You know, that's why sports is good for kids. It gets them off
addicted.
Their phone. And there are some Catholics who think that sports hurts your body, and they won't. It's, you know, your body's a temple of the Holy Spirit, and they won't let their kids do sports. Mm. I mean, that's going the other way. Some Pius the Tenth people.
Yeah. Right.
But this book, Return of the Gods, is really interesting because it really points up what's really, you know, how it moved in. And it's taken over little by little. It got into our laws. Look, got into our schools. Look what the teachers are doing in schools now. You know, they're trying to encourage kids to go through this gender dysphoria stuff, and they won't tell the parents.
How could they? You know? That's being rebelled against a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you hear in the debates last week?
Yeah.
Everybody was for doing away with the teachers' unions.
Yeah.
I wondered what your daughter thought.
Yeah.
Well, she's then, Janet, she says, thank God we're a Christian school. She says, I will go to jail before I do anything like this that the government.
But they lost in Maryland all those people that were fighting that. And that was just not just Catholics. That was mostly.
Well, they're losing on the abortion issue, too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was.
But they'll keep
they're
trying
losing against the school district in Maryland, too.
The point this guy makes in this book, though, is interesting. He said, we have to bring the gospel back.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that got rid of them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If we do that, we go in.
Right.
And
but how do we do that? Nobody wants to
hear another,
it.
That's another thing. It's interesting. Last weekend, we were at the retreat, the Knights of Columbus retreat, at the retreat center out there, White Coast. And it was really interesting, especially for Mary Beth, because we were supposed to go on retreat in February. And the Carmelite priest they had doing it got sick.
Mm.
He couldn't. So they had to change the date to last weekend. Okay. Last weekend was the weekend right before her breast cancer surgery.
Wow.
So she was able to go on retreat right before that, right?
Good. Yeah.
Then the priest who was Michael's best friend was there personally on retreat.
Oh,
he wasn't there as part of our retreat.
Wow.
And so we walked into the cafeteria, we saw, and Mary Beth saw his name on a plate for the cafeteria, you know?
Wow.
She said, he's here. So she texted him and said, are you here? Are you part of our retreat? Because Father Brian came out and gave a talk.
Oh, he did?
She thought he was going to do the same thing. He said, he was just there for himself.
Oh.
And so he met with us for a while.
Yeah.
And he anointed her.
Oh,
right before she was going to have her surgery on Monday, you know? So, I mean, we think we're in control, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you see God in control of all these things, you know?
Everything.
That was so neat to see that happen,
everything.
You know? Yeah. But he was there. So all these things go on. But Father Bashis was telling us about what he's doing at his parish. They got a whole new program coming in because he said, we talk about the church not catechizing well, but he said, what did Jesus say? And you got to always pay attention really close to what Jesus says.
Mm.
Everything he says, you know, I mean, he's got an economy of words that's incredible, but the way he says things too.
Mm.
He said, what was the Great Commission? Make disciples of all nations, baptize them, and then teach them all that I have commanded you.
Mm.
First thing was make disciples. We're spending all of our time catechizing.
Mm.
The evangelicals are spending all their time making disciples. You know, we got to learn how to make disciples first, because the fact that we don't make disciples is why kids drop out of the church in high school and college.
Right. You got to make it real to them.
Because they have to know that they belong to Jesus before they'll stay. Because just teaching them stuff isn't going to stick unless they're already a disciple. So he said, make them disciples, then baptize them, and then teach them. And that, so that's the program he has going at A Lady of Angels in Woodbridge.
This kid years ago, I mean, I had a good education with the nuns, but the, we never ever heard relationship with God and getting to know God. Never. It was always rote or beautiful parables and things like
it
that. But you got to get the relationship.
Not
they're not
going to
stay if they don't know Jesus.
It was all catechizing.
Right. Didn't work. Didn't they? A lot left.
And so, so his whole program at his church now, and they got a few other parishes around the diocese that are starting to do it too. There's a program, I forget what the name of it is now, we can get it from him. But that's the whole approach. You make disciples first, and then you baptize, and then you, because there's no point in baptizing somebody unless they already accept Jesus, right?
Right.
And so you make disciples, then you baptize them, then you teach them. Because the teaching can go on forever. There's so much in the church to learn that the teaching can take it to the end of your days. But the discipleship doesn't.
But then what about infant baptism?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No. Okay. No. Parents have to teach them.
I mean,
them
God told
Jesus.
Abraham to do that, right? When he told him to circumcise all the males. Okay? But that was the order Jesus gave these guys to go out and do that, you know? So even if somebody's baptized, you still got to make them disciples while they're growing up.
I was just thinking of marriage.
Yeah.
You don't all of a sudden meet somebody and get engaged. You can know them. You have to know them before you love them.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Well,
love at first sight.
Well,
sometimes.
No, that's true.
It's still a
that could happen. but the point of this book, Return of the Gods. We're talking about a book called Return of the Gods, George, by Jonathan Kahn. C-A-H-N. And that's what we've been talking about. And the point he makes is that it was the gospel that drove out these gods among people years ago. It's the gospel that has to come in and save us again. It's the gospel that's got to put God back in our laws. Because when you look at our law, look at our Supreme Court building. What's on top of the Supreme Court building? Moses and the Ten Commandments. You go inside the chamber, there's Moses up there, right? With the Ten Commandments. He said, we've got to put God back into our laws, into our legislature, into our executive branch, into our education system. We used to open the schools with a prayer in the morning. I went to public school. We opened with a prayer in the morning. We pledged allegiance to the flag.
Yeah.
You know?
We had a moment of silence. We didn't have.
Because you were so much younger. But there was a program on Madeline Murray O'Hare recently showing how satanic she was.
Oh, yeah.
And how evil she was. How was she able to do that? She's the one who got prayer out of school. Supreme Court.
I remember that.
Well, she was a woman. I think they had a lot to do with it. Nobody wanted to fight a woman.
Maybe,
You know, if you get a man out there, they'll fight him back. You know, but you don't fight women. And that probably had a lot to do with it, you know.
And people,
just our culture.
It's gotten soft.
But his point is that we've got to find a way to bring the gospel back into all these different. If we can do that, we can drive all this stuff right out. But until we do that, it's going to be sticking. And so there's got to be a concerted effort to bring the gospel back into all the aspects of our life.
I think, though, there are some things that we don't see on the media, some initiatives that are bringing
they're starting
up,
it.
A lot of them.
And they're a little here there. There's got to be a more of a concerted effort to do that, you know. Because when you look at what the National Education Association is doing with our teachers, it's terrible. You know.
But I thought that was funny. They all were for getting rid of it. I wonder if they'd have any luck if they got in.
I don't know. Yeah, I would hope so. So anyway, let us get back to our regular studies here. We are on, 5-2-13-1, I think. So here in 5, 6, and 7, Teresa's really getting into the personal relationship with God. And as we learn about this, we can start teaching our children some of these things. We can take, you know, the idea of having that personal relationship with Jesus that she talks about here can really be incorporated into a lot of things we do with our own children. And so that it can be a start to help out with other things we need to do. But here, you know, in this whole chapter 5, she's talking about the meeting between people and God, how they get to know each other. It's like the courtship phase. And then in chapter 6, you know, we're going to get into the betrothal and then 7 is the spiritual marriage. And so that's the progression we're going to be going through here. So she says, Teresa teaches how God works in the soul so that it can recognize itself as his own. And that's an interesting point there, because she's teaching us, how do we know we belong to God? How do we know that we're his own? Yeah. And that's she's teaching how God works in the soul so that the soul can recognize itself as belonging to God, giving the soul from what he has, which is what Jesus had in his time among us on earth. He cannot grant us a higher favor. And so he's calling us to himself, sharing himself with us, so that we can know we can then belong to him. She then asks Jesus why he wasn't thinking about the terrible suffering he was about to endure in his passion. And he responds, "No, my great love and the desire I have that souls be saved are incomparably more important than these sufferings. The very greatest sorrows that I have suffered and do suffer after being in the world are not enough to be considered anything at all in comparison with this love and desire to save souls." So Jesus says, you know, his suffering was temporary. Started, you know, Thursday night, ended Friday, you know, afternoon. It was horrible suffering, absolutely terrible suffering. But it was limited. But his suffering continues because of the rejection of his children. And that's the suffering that he still feels. He says, "I have suffered and do suffer because of his love and desire to save souls." If a soul would just turn to him, you know, there's so much he could do for that soul if they open themselves up and be willing to accept, you know.
Excuse me. So
Jesus says, "I have suffered and do suffer." So how and why can Jesus still suffer, given that he is in his kingdom?
Well, could you say that? Well, he suffers through the individual suffering that everyone is suffering in the world. What you did to the least of my brethren, you did to me.
Right.
And because of the time, there's no time with Christ.
Right.
With
yeah.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He's beyond
time. Present.
And so his main suffering is every time somebody rejects him.
All the souls,
you know,
that don't.
All the souls that choose hell rather than him.
And we just got to pray that they open just a
little bit. You know, he'll get in there. So somebody was writing about his passion, and they were considering, what wasn't you suffered at Gethsemane that was so terrible that it made you sweat blood? And there was a doctor that wrote about the passion, and he talked about the physical thing that has to happen in your body in order for you to sweat blood. And it can happen. It's a phenomenon that you can actually, but what you have to go through internally to be able to sweat blood is horrific. And he did that. And what this person said in their book was, and they don't know because they weren't there to ask him, obviously, but they were speculating that he that happened to him because he was looking at what he was about to do for all these people in the world, and then he saw all the souls that were going to reject that and say, "Go fly a kite. I want to go to hell instead."
And the Eucharistic miracles all show that trauma is in the body.
That's
it would be in the body, which I think
that's
is
right.
So
it's amazing, you know.
I always just thought he was seeing all the sins from the beginning of time until the end of time, and it was just so many.
Well, it wouldn't be just the sins. It'd be the sins that people attach to. Because one sin is forgiven, that's what he rejoices in. He said, more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than a thousand who don't have to repent. Yeah, but it's the ones that sin and attach to that sin and won't turn it loose. And said, "I'd rather go to hell than give up this sin." You know, and to see what he was about to do for them and then have them say, "I don't care." That's what really got him.
Like even St. Augustine this morning said, "Give me chastity, but not now."
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just think like people,
it's a process. You have to. You don't just break it off in a second.
Yeah.
You know?
And how are they supposed to do it in our society? Just think of all the people that are addicted to porn. It's like everywhere.
Oh, it's everywhere.
And I mean, maybe it's soft porn that we're seeing, but I mean,
it's everywhere.
So it's
and that's the whole point of Judge DeCon's book. You know, we've got to bring the gospel into every aspect of our lives again, not just in church, but every aspect of lives, in order for that kind of stuff to go away. So where pornography is no longer acceptable, to where human trafficking is no longer acceptable, you know, to where gender dysphoria is no longer acceptable. And the gospel's got to do that. You know, we can't do that. I can't go to these people and say, you're wrong. They just laugh at me, right? Yeah. The gospel's got to do it.
Yeah. But those athletes right now, a couple of them that have been on Fox, they talk about their faith is what caused them
isn't that beautiful?
To rebel against it. Yeah. And they're taking all this hate because of it.
Yeah.
But they're a good example to
them. They are.
So maybe that's how he will bring them up.
And also the people that have already had these sex change operations, and they regret it terribly.
They've been
on Fox News.
Well, Johns Hopkins at one time discontinued that years ago because they saw no effect, but they reinstated it recently because they got so much pressure.
Well, they got so much money, too.
I mean,
for these operations. Right. Yeah.
They closed it down, like in England and Sweden and all that, you know.
Right.
Because they showed
10 years later, their suicide rate is 7 times.
Yeah. The suicide rates are horrible.
So many medical issues.
But the worst part about it is not reversible.
Yeah.
You take a young girl, you give her a hysterectomy, you take her breasts off, you know. Later on, she, you know, how's she going to be a mother?
Yeah. And they said the suicide rate is escalating.
It's huge.
Oh, it is,
But it's a money-making.
Immediately they have some satisfaction, but years later, Father Spitzer's big on that.
Oh, yeah, he's good. He's good.
So well, all I mean, those, just imagine they sit there and say, I did it to myself.
Right.
You know?
But they're starting to sue the doctors.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that'll change things when they start doing stuff like
So all, the, all those things are what can cause Jesus to suffer, because people reject what he did and they choose something else instead. And hopefully they repent. If they do, then fine. But if they don't, they still push this stuff. You know, there's no telling. And so he can still suffer even though he's in his kingdom. He can suffer terribly over everyone that rejects him because he loves him so much. You know, if you love somebody tremendously and they say, I don't want any part of you, that hurts. You know, unrequited love. Right?
Wasn't it La Salette, the Blessed Mother wept?
Yeah, La Salette, that's right. So then Teresa speaks about the suffering that she feels seeing our Lord offended and how her suffering paled in comparison to his. She then speaks of how much our Lord must have suffered throughout his life, since he, in his divinity, saw all things present to him, including the serious offenses against his father. And we recall how Jesus responded to the money changers, scolding them for making his father's house a den of thieves. She believes these sufferings were greater than his physical suffering and his passion, because his suffering over lost souls continues. But he could see the very temporary danger of his physical sufferings. She says his suffering is tempered by the suffering suffered here below by those who love him and offer their sufferings to him. The morning offering we do every day, right?
Cardinal Pell, in his book, says that he avoided St. Teresa and John of the Cross because he didn't like the idea of suffering.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
I was going to go a little on what we were talking. It's a little off of it, but I think a lot of things are like the holy face of Jesus, like things are coming back. It's like they're like raining down all these different things, and I think it's a way that people are trying to appease God for all the different things that we're doing.
Sure.
People well, you know, going to Mass.
The month of July was the month of the precious blood. And if you look at the website and look at the chaplet for the precious blood that Jesus gave Barnabas, and his church approved, he says if you make a novena of that chaplet, that he will grant what you request. And so I started doing that, you know. It's 9 days. So you start at the first of the month, do it for 9 days, and then you do it again for 9 days, and you do it again till the 27th. Then the first of the month, you start again. And you can change your intentions each time a little bit. But it's just the novena of the precious blood. If you don't have that, let me know, and I'll send it to you. But it's pretty nice. It's And it, basically, it looks a lot like the 12 years prayers, because it goes through the five wounds of Christ. Mm-hmm. It goes through, you know, the two hands, the two feet, and the side. Mm-hmm. And so it does a meditation for each one of those. Mm-hmm. And then it, but he talks about the blood that's shed with each of those kinds of wounds. Mm-hmm. Well, and then it's got a prayer that says, "The precious blood of Jesus Christ, save us and the whole world."
Yeah.
You know, which is
so, you know, they had a priest at Holy Trinity. It was like in July, and he wrote a book on the Holy Face. Okay. It was a really good one.
Yeah.
And so he was there, and his one of his he was a confessor to the nun that they discovered was incorruptible.
Wilhelmina.
Yeah.
And it, like, all these things are like tying together. It's kind of like, ooh. Mm. And he said that this novena to the Holy Face, or it's not novena, just
devotion.
Devotion. Mm. He says it is to go after revolutionaries. And he defined revolutionaries as the elite and the men in power that are trying to change everything.
Wow.
And that he said this has been around a while, but it kind of faded away. Mm-hmm. And when he was talking to, I can't remember which sister, if it was that particular one that passed away, he said, "I feel like I should be doing something, and I don't know what it is." And she said, "The Holy Face." And he goes, "I don't even know what that is." And then he said, within a matter of months, all people he did not ask for started sending him stuff about the Holy Face.
Wow.
And then he wrote
Jesus appeared, I don't remember exactly, but some nun, and gave her the impression of the Holy Face and wanted a medal instructed for that devotion.
Do they use the Holy Face from the resurrection? From
the Veronica?
No, it's from the veil. And
Veronica's
it's from the shroud.
Yeah.
And they sent me one from France. They sent me a little... for France. And it's got the Holy Face in the middle.
Yeah. I think Holy Trinity has a... When you walk back out of church, it's right there on the choir loft.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, because it's Father, I think Father Carr, it's monthly now that they're meeting there, and they're doing all the prayers, and he's talking about it.
Yeah.
But he had that priest come in.
Yeah.
And he said, "What's the odds of me of coming here to Virginia to talk about this? This is God wild, you know? It's God working, you know?"
Sure. Well, we got to try to.
Here's a medal of the Holy Face. This is.
Yeah, I have another one here.
Yeah, this is that one.
Yeah, it's like his face, and then
is
it's got the host on the. Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the host is on the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, they got the shroud on the back.
You got the shroud. Yeah.
The Holy Shroud on the back.
Yeah, it's in.
So when you walk out of Holy Trinity, it's right there.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
Well,
they bring it up on the altar
that.
When he does the thing. Mm-hmm.
So how does Jesus respond to those who offer their sufferings to him out of love for him? How do you think he responds?
I would think he pours grace into their souls. Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it makes them happy.
Yeah, because that's really what he's asking for, right?
That's all he wants.
Yeah, accept my love, mm-hmm. and then I will give you great graces.
And that's how I think of these devotions.
That's right, yeah.
You know, you're giving your sufferings or whatever,
right.
And you're saying these prayers.
Yeah. And I think what we see in a lot of these devotions is not just a devotion to something, but incorporated into the prayers is prayers for the rest of the world to be converted and come. You know, I think that's part of the value of those devotions, because you're asking for not just for yourself, but for the whole world to
conversion.
Be converted.
And I mean that's why he's suffering is all these souls that
that's
don't
right.
want to convert.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that takes us to chapter 3.
Which I don't forget. And
5311. Teresa begins chapter 3 by saying that she will discuss what God gives to the soul in this state. So we talked about, you know, how important it is to give ourselves to God. Now, so what is God going to give to the soul in this state? She speaks about another kind of union and how important love of neighbor is for this union. Growing in self-knowledge and humility never stops. Mm-hmm. Teresa says a soul must always understand that one has to strive to go forward in the service of the Lord and in self-knowledge. For if a person does no more than receive this favor, and if as though already securely in possession of something, she grows careless in her life and turns aside from the heavenly path, which consists of keeping the commandments, that which happens to the silkworm will happen to her. Teresa then speaks about the effect in others from the gift of this prayer of union. She returns to the silkworm analogy, talks about the silkworm laying eggs, as she calls them seeds of faith, to produce others, and says, I hold that it is God's desire that a favor so great not be given in vain. If a person doesn't herself benefit, the favor will benefit others. It always brings profit to other souls during the time that it continues to live virtuously, and they catch fire from its fire.
That's nice to hear that.
Yeah. Through this prayer and its effects, God can rapidly build up the kingdom of God. So do you think someone who has experienced this prayer of union at least once would be a spiritual magnet for others? What would draw you to them?
Yes, they would be.
Yes.
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can sense it in people.
You can, yeah.
You can. They have a joy. I wrote down. Yeah. They have a joy. And they're forgetful of self. And they live for others.
Right.
And you sense it.
You sense
you
it.
Know.
You do.
You know.
They're peaceful. They're peaceful.
Yeah. Exactly.
No lot of anxiety.
Right. Mm. Exactly. Peaceful, no anxiety.
Happy. They're happy.
Happy,
people.
Yeah.
They live happy, even with their trials.
Right.
You know, not depressed.
Mary Beth and I went to a Marian conference up at Emmitsburg once, and there was a priest there, Father Winfred, and very holy man, extremely. He was the ministry partner of a lady who was a stigmatist up in Pennsylvania. Mm. They would go around churches and do talks and all like that. Well, he was there, and I had met him previously, so I introduced Mary Beth to him, and she said the minute she met him, it was like meeting Jesus himself.
Wow, yeah.
She said it was just incredible, the way she felt when she just looked in his eyes. You know, it's just so there are people like that.
Yeah, you know.
It's the same Father.
See, you know.
Winfred, R-I-N-F-R-E-T. And
yeah, you want to be around them. I have a holy doctor.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
He's,
Moranian.
You know, yeah, Father, yeah. Father Golub.
Yeah.
Golub. I never knew he was Catholic.
Yeah.
And I tell him, I said, I pay to come to talk to you. He is so, you can feel it. And he says, and then he pulled out his rosaries and he said, I'm never without them. And I pray for all my patients.
Oh,
there's such a beauty in that man. You know, you can sense it.
That's how Father Winfred was too. You know, it was just amazing. He died the year my son was ordained. So I still have a devotion to him, you know. I've got a box of relics at home and I have his photograph inside the cover of the box of relics.
He wrote any books or anything?
No, he was just he just taught. Oh, he taught at a seminary, and he was at a group one time, and a bunch of us went to confession to him. And when you went to confession to him, you didn't go, you just sit in front of him or anything, you know. He'd pull the chair out like this and sit you next to him, and he'd put his arm around you. See, he'd say, "Look, good, let's have a conversation," you know. And you talk about it. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And my son was like that. I mean, I'm saying he's like so holy, but he was an amazing confessor. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me when they see my name and they say, "Oh, you related to, you know?" I say, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, I can't tell you how much he helped me in confession. It was just amazing." And she said, "I can't tell you what I said." But he said he really helped me a lot, you know?
That's why he got to go sooner.
Yeah. Well, God needed him for something, you know?
Yeah.
That's the only consolation I have, that he was so influential with so many people that, you know, God must have needed him. And, you know, God protected him for a long time to get him there. Because when he was born with a very serious congenital heart defect.
Wow.
And he had to get operated on when he was 5 years old. And there was only two doctors in the whole country who could do the operation. And one was in Mayo Clinic and one was in Atlanta. And the cardiologist we had in Denver had been at Mayo Clinic. And he said, "I'm going to try to get you there," because he said, "I think his chances of coming through are about 65%, which is not that big, you know."
Mm.
So we got up to Mayo Clinic, and we were living up in Denver, up in the mountains. And so there's a oxygen thing that happens, you know, when you go to high altitude, your lungs expand and all. So we got to Mayo Clinic, which is at sea level, and he looked great, you know. So we told the doctors what he's diagnosed with. He said, "I don't believe that. He looks too good. He should be blue all over, you know."
Wow.
And so he ran the test. They said, "Sure enough, that's what he's got." And so the surgeon came in, And, he's got this entourage behind him, you know. And when he stops, they stop. When he talks, they listen. And he's got these big long fingers like a surgeon, you know. And he said, I estimate his chances of coming through at 95%. Do you have any questions? He said, nope, go for it.
Wow. Mail's the best. Ken Burns did a feature on Mail that's really good.
Yeah, it's really, really good, you know. And so he was he did the surgery, and then he did it first thing in the morning at 7:30. And then he brought him back to the room, and he said, well, he's going to be out for a while, you know, kind of stuff. And so they put him in the bed, and in no time, he pulled his intubator out, and he said, I want some Jell-O. So the nurse said, if you want Jell-O, we'll bring you Jell-O, you know. Wow. So they brought him Jell-O.
Wow.
And he just bounced back really quick, you know. And then when he was in the seminary, he had a blood clot in his upper arm. And he's upper arm. His arm all swelled up and everything.
Wow.
He just so happened that his classmate was a medical doctor who had decided to become a priest. So he took him to the local hospital, and he said, well, sit down and we'll call you. He said, no, you call this kind of doctor right now. Tell him Dr. So-and-so wants him in the room now. And so they got him in there, and they treated him. You know? So he had so many of these things.
Yeah.
You know? He was born with pyloric stenosis. He was operated on his stomach when he was a month old. So God took him through all these challenges to get him to the priesthood.
Wow.
And then after 20 years, took him home. Yeah.
Wow.
But it was amazing.
Wow. So he's a priest for 20 years, though.
Yeah, he was during the 1999, and he died in 2020. Yeah.
They say we have a mission. Everyone has a mission in life.
Yeah.
Maybe when we're
And he was a great priest.
Yeah.
He was dean of the deanery and everything. And, So when he was at his hospice at our house, Bishop Burbage came out to the house to see him and spent a couple of hours with him. But God needed him for something. That he needed him more than we needed him. That's the way I have to look at it. You know, otherwise I'd have a hard time dealing with it.
Yeah.
So you know,
God knows best.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So there are some people that are spiritual magnets. You just feel it.
Yeah.
And you can see it. A lot of times you can see it in their eyes. They have this peace in their eyes, you know. I saw that in Medjugorje when I was looking at the people in the village. Mm-hmm. Hard workers, you know, gnarled hands and everything. Mm. But you look in their eyes, and they got so much peace in their eyes, you know. They know where they're going.
You look at people. You can, eyes, what are the soul, the window to the soul?
Yeah, right.
You can look at people's eyes. You get an idea.
Yeah.
You can tell the sneaks in them.
See.
Just went to, I had a store to look at mattresses. And the guy selling it, having the sales tactics and just pressure. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, we got out of there. But I was just like, there's something.
You know, we
like,
do on TV. Yeah. I have a friend in Long Island. She's Costa Republican, and we have great conversation for an hour at least a day. So she goes, I said, I can tell the Republicans from the Democrats. I don't even have to see what they are on the bottom of the screen. Look at their face.
Yeah.
Look at, they're not happy.
Yeah.
They're not happy.
You talking about about salespeople? When I was in the Air Force, I got a part-time job selling Kirby vacuum cleaners because I had a shift. I was on shift work, so I had time to do them.
Yeah. And so, like a young
one. So I never could sell anything. I went to this guy's house one night. I was demonstrating, and he said, "That works really good." I said, "Yeah, it's a really good vacuum cleaner." But he said, "It's overpriced." I said, "Yeah, it is." I said, "I'll tell you why it's overpriced, because I get a big commission out of the out of what you pay." And so he started laughing. I started laughing. I said, "Thank you for watching the demonstration." I packed up and left.
I got to tell you this. I watch the old Raymond shows. I watch the political, and I watch Raymond. Raymond had a show, the wife was out, and she was thinking we might need a vacuum cleaner, so this lovely, sexy blonde comes to the door. Raymond bought that vacuum cleaner. It wasn't so good. That was the whole show.
That show, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, 5321. After speaking of those who fall away, Teresa says, in order to merit more and more and avoid getting lost like such persons, our security lies in obedience and refusal to deviate from God's law. So she's really big on following the commandments. Mm. She mentions that several times all through this book. Mm. Obeying the commandments of God and loving your neighbor were really big in her book. Obedience has always been a serious theme all through Scripture, from Adam and Eve to Abraham to Noah and Jesus. Jesus' great commission to the apostles was to teach all that he commanded them. For those who are in this dwelling place, does God help them remain obedient, or is that totally the responsibility of the soul? And
we
why?
Can't do it without His grace.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need His grace to do it.
Yeah.
And He wants you. He's calling you to Him. So He's going to give you every grace you need to make that happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
When you're at this point, you don't get away from God unless you make a decision that I'm giving up on this thing and I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. One demon has convinced you that this is too hard.
Yeah.
It's too much work. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to get out of here and go. Mm.
But that's a real conscious decision.
Right.
That's
that is a conscious decision.
And I think God is protecting you after
that. Oh, yes. He is, yeah. Sure.
I always felt that after John died. Oh, I literally felt. I said, the sorrow, as much as I loved him, and we were married, what was it, 56 years. There was sorrow, but there was joy. But I felt it wasn't really hitting me as much. I wasn't denying it, but I felt there was something there.
Well, you're going to see him again.
Pardon me?
You're going to see him again.
Exactly. Yeah. There's hope and it was joy that he had a good life. And it
wasn't, that's what you
wasn't
want
permanent.
For him and you.
That's all you want, yeah.
It wasn't permanent,
God does protect
right.
us.
Yeah.
He does. Yeah.
That's how I feel about Mike. You know, I talk to him every day. You know?
Right.
And as old as I am, it won't take me too long to meet him again.
It's not, I always say that to John.
You know, all those other people that he influenced are probably talking to him, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. More than they would have if he hadn't been in heaven.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So beautiful.
And I think when someone dies in your family, then you start to, you know, say prayers for them.
Right,
and then
right.
you start to, I pray for my father, and then I start thinking about all his siblings. And then I'm like, I got this long list. You're going, and this, and the ones, you know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back 20 years. Oh, yeah, that person. Yeah.
I just met somebody recently who said they thought her mother was a church lady, you know, until she died, and they started asking her for things, and she's given them so much more than when she was living.
Wow.
Which
I
thought was really a great testimony.
That's beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, let's take the next one. In addressing the issue of those who do not receive the supernatural experiences that she discusses in this dwelling place, she says, true union can very well be reached with God's help if we make the effort to obtain it by keeping our wills fixed only on that which is God's will. If what you say is true, you will have obtained this favor from the Lord, and you needn't care at all about the other delightful union that was mentioned, meaning infused prayer of contemplation.
Mm.
That which is most valuable in the delightful union is that it proceeds from this union of which I am now speaking. And one cannot arrive at the delightful union if the union coming from being resigned to God's will is not very certain. So being resigned to His will is a key to a lot of this stuff. You know, you can't let your own will be dominant. It's got to be God's will.
Mm.
How desirable is this union with God's will? Happy the soul that has reached it. Such a soul will live tranquilly in this life and in the next as well. That's what Joanna was saying a little earlier.
Mm.
You know, that you feel this peace, this tranquility, and it just kind of permeates everything you do. You know, you don't get all upset about everything.
Mm.
You have that peace. What must a soul do to keep its will fixed on and only on that which is God's will?
You have to empty yourself of your will, which is difficult because you have all this
Well, you always have a will, right? But you have to keep asking yourself, asking God to help you live His will. He's not going to come down and tell you, okay, here's my list, this is my will, bum, 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 bum. He's not going to give you a list of 10 things, right? He gave us 10 commandments, but I mean, for your life, He's not going to just kind of give you the list, because that would... It's like imposing it on you if He did it, you know. But you can ask Him in prayer to help you discern His will. And that's the thing that He wants you to do. He wants you to come to Him in prayer all the time and then ask Him to help you live His will for you. Even if you don't know it, if you can't list it out. Because as things come to you each day, you know, what is His will that you do with that?
Mm.
you know, and so you try to live in accordance with that.
I think Mass, Holy Communion, that gives you the strength and the grace to stay in contact with Him. Even confession.
Yeah,
that gives
us. Any kind of sacrament,
prayer. Right. Yeah, you said prayer.
Sure. Because all the sacraments give you sanctifying grace.
Yeah.
They're sanctifying your soul.
Yeah.
So that's,
Yeah.
In other ways, we lose focus.
You live up?
We lose focus.
That's it. Yeah. That's how we lose focus.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can't lose focus.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And another way to try to deal with God's will too is to talk to Him frequently during the day, even if it's just a little short, you know, thing, and just say, you know, I'm not sure what I should do next. Help me out here. You know, give me some inspiration as to which way I should go, and which thing should I do. I've got a kid that's having a problem. How do I help him deal with that? You know, I've got a friend who's got a problem. How do I help him deal with that? What do you want me to do next? You know,
or like you always do, you always say, you know, I can't do this. You have
I always
to do
say, it. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you really quickly, I had 4 hibiscus when we moved in, right? And eventually they all died. I had 1 dead, 1 left, really all dead, and 1 blooming. And it bothered me. It was an eyesore. And you can sort of rock this one a little back and forth. And I said, that's good. So I found this little saw, this wide, and it's curved, and a nice handle. I go, this looks good. So I go, okay, Jesus, you're going to come with me. We're going to do something. So I went out and was able to get 4 or 5 of the branches. They were about this wide, the branches. I said, come on, help me. Give me the strength. So I did that 2 days. I trimmed all that stuff. And then I was down to the bark. The main stem. And there were 2 shoots. Shoots were long, but they were about that wide. So I did one halfway, and I said, Jesus, now, could you give me a break? It would be nice. Make it easy. So I'm sawing it, and one of them cracked. Oh, I was so happy. I didn't have to do much. The other one was the spark, the tree. That wasn't rocking back and forth. And I go, Lord, please, please. I'm getting tired. So I kept doing it about 20 minutes back, and I heard a crack. I go, it cracked more and more and more. Then I put my leg on it, went down to the ground, and it was lying on the ground, but it was still attached, like the root and everything, in the dirt. And I thought, I can't leave it like this, but what can I do? It's God is so good. So I kept turning it, and as I turned it, it kept cracking. So I turned it for about 20 minutes, and I'll tell you, it's so funny. I'm trying to think of a prayer, because it reminded me of the wood of the cross, and I said, look at this beautiful wood. So as I know, we adore thee, O Christ, and we praise thee, because by the Holy Cross thou hast redeemed the world. And I'm happy. The whole thing, I said, wouldn't it be nice if this, you did it? The whole thing cracked. So I said, it was like that one. So I stood it up. I said, I got to tell my kids, it was over 5 feet. Not horribly heavy. I felt like I hit the jackpot. My neighbor's over, and I said, look. I said, look what he did. And she's clapping, and she's pointing up like this. Now that eyesore is gone, and it was like, I never had such joy. But it's like when, like, not we have proof. I mean, he did that because there was no way. And I never get an ache or a pain in the arm or the shoulder. Because my cousin always says, oh, wait, tomorrow you're going to be like, doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's good.
Happen. That's God.
That's good.
It's only God.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It's great.
Well, it's 10:32, so we got to quit for the day. We will pick up with this next time. Anybody have any final thoughts on the day before we say goodbye till next week?
Jim, next Monday is Labor Day.
Oh, Monday's Labor Day. Yeah, so we're going to cancel next week.
Yeah, cancel.
We'll cancel next week and come in 2 weeks.
Oh,
thank you for reminding me.
Oh, gosh.
I didn't realize that.
I forgot.
Yeah, no Monday.
Yeah. So we shall skip
Labor
Day. I think
I'm painting a room.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks then.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.